Sounds like the microphone we have here is picking up well, and if you can't hear, if you'll indicate to us in some way, you know, like that, well, we have the young lady in the back that will turn things up, and I think we'll get along well. Can everyone hear us so far? Is that coming back all right? All right, fine, thank you. Well, Marge and I, of course, are just delighted to be here. We're delighted to have you here with us as we begin to share some very strong feelings that we have in this area of aging. As we look out across the audience here, we see a number of you who look to be about our same number of years, and so we are in kindred spirits. And being so, I think that we will be speaking to a subject matter that is common to all of our hearts.
I have to admit, though, that I am surprised that we had anyone. All day yesterday, as we were talking about this subject, we couldn't find anyone who would admit that they were this age.
We're really delighted that they have placed us in this particular facility, in this particular assembly room. We know that it, in no way is it intended to honor Marge and I, because we have done nothing to deserve this this place, but we like to believe that it is honoring all of us in this older age group, because I think that we are beginning to realize, and others are beginning to realize, the tremendous potential that there is in the older group. And if we can begin to share ourselves with one another and the information that we have and the experiences that we have and the goals and desires that we have to utilize other people of our age and ourselves, that we can have a tremendous impact upon the church in the years ahead. And I believe that we can sort of pave the way for this baby boom generation that's following very closely behind us, and which can have an even greater impact upon the church than we can have as we begin. And I don't mean to diminish what we can personally do, but I believe very strongly that we can lay some groundwork that when the baby boom people become our age, that we will have set some standards and set some pathways that if they will follow, we can see tremendous, tremendous strides in the church.
I was feeling very honored that they put us in the auditorium. You know, that is a signal honor. But someone brought me down to earth and said, it's because you older people can't climb the stairs to the classrooms.
I want to tell you a little bit about how we're going to be conducting these sessions. We will have three sessions today, one at this time, another one at 11, and then a third session at 3:30. We want you to know that each of these sessions are going to be different. We're not going to be repeating anything that is said in any of these sessions. This is like a building block. We're going to start this morning with material that we will build upon at the 11 o'clock session and build further upon that at 3:30. This is really it's a progressive study of the subject matter that's been assigned to us. We hope that each of you will stay with us today and be with us during each of these three sessions. For your information, this morning at this particular session, we're going to be taking a look at some of the facts and some of the research and some of the background that we feel will help all of us understand a little bit more about who and what we are as an aging generation. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to be talking about some attitudes that we feel are finding themselves into becoming a part of this whole process of aging. And then finally at 3 o'clock, we're going to really deal with the main subject matter of what we're here about, and that is refire, don't retire. And that's in a nutshell, what our message is going to be during these 3 hours that we'll be able to be with you today.
When Dell and I are asked to participate in different programs as older Christians, I have to admit to having mixed feelings. First of all, I feel honored and feel a great deal of pleasure at being used in the Lord's kingdom at our age. But I also have to admit to feeling shocked to realize that we are now included in the golden oldies. I have to look at my own view of aging, of my own personal aging, and I have to say that I do know that I am getting older. I have to say the only reason why I know is because my body tells me so. And never was that more evident than yesterday afternoon. We have a grandson who is in the Air Force stationed at Carswell, and he came out here yesterday, and one of his friends out at Dyess got us on the flight line so that we could go up into one of the KC-135 tankers that our grandson works on and see everything that he did. And that was neat until I saw that you had to go up one of those ladders, you know, not a regular ladder, but one of those, just the steel rung ladder, straight up into that plane. And then, of course, my grandson wanted me to get see everything on that plane, and one of them is in the boom position where the young man lies on his tummy to let that boom, fly that boom to fuel the B-1 tankers. Now here is this old lady getting down on her hands and knees, crawling back in this thing to lay down flat on my stomach to look out the window. And my body, I did it, because I wouldn't admit to my grandson that I couldn't, but my body did tell me that, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be. And that is a problem for me, because I was raised in the country. I rode horses, I climbed trees, I worked in the fields. I did all of the physical things, which I find that I'm no longer able to do. But I have to tell you, inside, I don't feel the age that I do. Helen Hayes at 77 said, "Somehow I expected 77 to be a decrepit, enfeebled age that happened only to other people. But it isn't like that at all. Inside, I still feel just like a kid." There are a lot of views of aging. Someone said being older is just like being younger with problems. And I think that that's probably true, because I see myself as on the inside, and certainly not looking at the age that I am, evidently and obviously on the outside too. After all, age is a relative thing. To a six-year-old grandson, our teenage grandson looks old. And to the teenager, anyone over 30 is definitely over the hill. To the 30-year-old, someone who's reached retirement age is on their last legs. And to the 40-year-old, middle age suddenly becomes 60, 65. And to those of us in our 60s and 70s, we admit that we see age approaching, but it's not quite here yet. So I am really amazed when I think that it seemed only yesterday that Dell and I were young parents dealing with all the challenges and the struggles that involves. And I ask myself, where did those years go? All at once, we're grandparents living alone again. And in a couple of years, we could be great grandparents. So it is a sobering thought.
As we've looked back upon our earlier years, we've realized that we've done pretty much like our parents did, and perhaps even our parents before us, that we dedicated ourselves to those things that it seemed like the young people were being expected to do. We taught classes. We began with adults where they were much safer, learning to teach with adults. Then we branched out into teenagers, which was a little more risky. Then we began to teach in the high school class, which became very risky. But with our confidence, we were able to have the confidence that we could do that and did teach in that area. And then Marge and I, as team teachers, had the opportunity of teaching a fifth and a sixth grade class together. And I think that of all the teaching that I did, I thought that was the most rewarding, the one that I really enjoyed above all the others, although all of them were great. When we got in with those fifth and sixth grade children and were able to teach together, that was one of the greatest experiences of our early years. In our earlier years, too, we did personal work. The burden of that seemed to be very much on the younger people. We worked with the youth. We had them in our homes, and we went on parties with them, and we saw that there were things for them to do. All of these as we were in our younger years as Christians. And it seemed to be that it was the younger Christians, like ourselves, that were looked to do this. We seem to see in the pattern in our time that the older Christians, as they grew older and as they reached retirement age, from their secular work, they also seemed to reach retirement from church work. The attitude seemed to be that I've done my time and now it's time for me to step aside and rest and let the next generation of younger people take over. And we see this same pattern continuing today. And I must admit that as we approached retirement age, some of our first thoughts were, now we can step back and rest, and we'll let the younger generation take over. And that was some of the first thoughts that entered into our mind. What I think is happening is, as we've had in the cartoon character, we have found the enemy, and it is us. I think as an older generation, we are somewhat our own enemy by stepping aside from responsibilities that we are very well capable of taking on and giving the opportunity for our younger people to be doing other things, things that are just as important but in a different area. We have moved into our maturity and now into our older Christian age, and we are finding that we don't want to fit that kind of pattern. We believe that we can continue to serve, and we can continue to serve effectively, and in doing so, we believe that we can let the younger generation do something different and to do something that we believe is as important as what we are doing in carrying on our programs, and to allow them to get back to working on their marriages and on their families, and in that way do a service that we weren't really allowed to do, we chose not to do because we were fitting ourselves into the pattern. And in doing so, I think we cheated our family out of some things that we can now provide our younger people with, which we didn't really enjoy.
Someone wrote this view of life. Life is all backwards. We ought to start off with retirement and rest until we get good and tired of it, then be given a gold watch and start to work. Then we ought to work hard until we get young enough to go to college, enjoy college until we're young enough to go to high school, and after getting younger each year of school, we just play around the house and neighborhood for a while and have no problems or responsibilities. Then we'd go back into the womb, sleep for 9 months, and end up a gleam in somebody's eye. Well, that sounds kind of enticing, doesn't it? But that's not what God ordained. And like I said a minute ago, I felt a little bit shocked when I realized Carl Burkeen thought we were older people when he asked us to talk to you about it. I really find it difficult to fit us into that category. Now, I know we're not young people, But old people, that didn't seem to fit either. In discussing this with a friend, she said she had finally discovered what middle age was. Middle age is always the person who's 10 years older than you are. Most of us don't like to think about old age. And I think the reason we don't like to in this country is because youth has been glorified. And much of the view of aging is extremely negative. The well-known French author Simone de Beauvoir has published an impressive and well-documented study of aging, and she dealt with the biological, ethnological, and historical part of it. And then she said, "The vast majority of mankind looks upon the coming of old age with sorrow or rebellion." And I think that we see this in so many people our age and older. They don't like to admit being old. In fact, one woman that I was asking her some questions, I wanted to share what her life had been, and I said, "Would you tell me how old you are?" And she said, "No, I won't." She said, "Once I tell my age, people put me into a box, and I don't like that at all." And I tried to tell her what we were trying to do to encourage other people our age, you know, but she still wouldn't do it. I did find out she's in her 80s. But, you know, there's even a negative view in Scripture. The 31st Psalm says, "Take pity on me, Yahweh. I'm in trouble now. Grief wastes away my eye, my throat, my innermost parts. For my life is worn out with sorrow, my years with sighs. My strength yields under misery, and my bones are wasting away. I am contemptible and loathsome to my neighbors, to my friends a thing of fear. Those who see me in the street hurry past me. I'm forgotten, as good as dead in their hearts, something discarded." And I think in our nation, we have made older people a throwaway commodity. In fact, a recent survey we read of young people at a state university showed that the majority interviewed viewed old people as sort of a nuisance and with a kind of a contempt. They did not have a positive view about older people then. I think aging does seem to throw a lot of us for a loop, especially when we face the fact, and like Dell said, we is it. I don't think I ever feared growing old, but somehow it seems such a long way in the future. And all at once, it's here. It's today. I'm living it then. I think aging is a fact of life. And since sin came into the world, it's been part of God's process for us as human beings. Man's technology is allowing us to live longer and longer, never before possible in the history of man. In fact, the graying of America is a vital concern facing our nation today. People are living longer and not as many babies are being born. And this is indeed a unique situation for the world. And we need to add right here that the church is part of the world in this. We are getting older in the church, and we need to understand that. As Christians, we are part of this aging process.
I think it's important for us to accept this phenomenon of aging, and especially the way that aging is taking place not only in the United States as a whole, but the way that aging is taking place in our church. I think that it would be a travesty and a tragic situation if we do not plan ahead for what's happening, because there is enough information being gathered today that we can plan and look ahead, I believe, intelligently. And in doing so, we can make some plans that will really be beneficial to the church, to ourselves, and to those that we can have an influence upon in the world. I think we must understand this whole phenomenon to the fullest extent that it's possible for us to do that. Most of us learn to utilize it so that an untold storehouse of our own talent and experience and Christian service can be devoted to this effort. Marge and I have decided to dedicate ourselves to encouraging those who are finding ourselves in this graying category to understand that our service is needed, that it's valuable, and that we do have much to offer, and that we should not retire from our commitment to serve. As we said a while ago, we've seen too many older people that want to step back and let others do the serving, and to really ask that the younger people take over now that we've put in our time. We'd like to reverse that trend and to keep us golden oldies active in some way the rest of our life. Now, that isn't to be just a very nice thing to keep the older people busy, because we think that we can really provide a balance that will keep our church alive, it'll keep it growing, and we believe it can keep it reaching out. And we want to remember that there just aren't that many younger ones coming along, and we're going to need to really take it upon ourselves to fill a gap that is rapidly creating itself in the church.
We think it might be profitable right now if we would share with you some of the facts which have helped us understand what's happening. Here are a few of the statistics for our nation and some predictions they're making for the future. 100 years ago, the life expectancy in the U.S. was 45. Today, it's an average of 75. At the current life expectancy growth rate, by the year 2000, the life expectancy will be 92 to 96 years. That's just 12 years off. In 1890, 2.5 million in the U.S. were 65 or older. In 1987, there were 30 million in this age group. In July 1983, for the first time in the history of a nation, there became more people who were over 45 than were under 25. The present rate of increase in the 65 and over age bracket is 1,400 per day, or 500,000 per year, since more are reaching this age than are dying. By the year 2020, it is predicted that there will be 60 million people who are 65 or older. When Dell and I were born in the 1920s, our life expectancy was 54 years. We've lived past that. And now at our age, our life expectancy is 82 years. So it's an interesting phenomenon. The longer you live, the longer you can expect your life expectancy to be. A
few more figures that I think will help us to understand who we are. Today, over 2 million are 85 or older. By the year 2000, 20 million will be in this category, because, as Marge said, more are reaching this age than are dying. And remember, 2000, as Marge said, is only 12 years away. Here's a most surprising statistic to me. Today, there are 30,000 people alive in the United States who are 100 years of age or older, 30,000. The prediction with the current life expectancy rate, there will be 100,000 over 100 years of age in the year 2000, and by 2050, there will be 1 million people who are 100 years or older. Experts in this field of research tell us that out of 100,000 men alive today, 423 will live to be 100. And out of 100,000 women alive today, 1,927 will reach 100. By the year 2000, 80% of the U.S. population is predicted to be women, minorities, and older people.
So it's a fact, and we need to be preparing for it right now. We're not saying that they shouldn't have programs for younger Christians, that the church certainly should be active in all age groups, but I think that we need to swing just a little bit and to devote some more time and attention to those of us who are older. Brother McKissick just told us that one out of every three Christians in Nashville is 65. Isn't that what you said? 65 years or older.
Let me give you two other statistics about how we're doing as an aging population. In the two decades from 1960 to 1980, the part of the population composed of children under the age of five declined from 20 million to 16 million, or by 19.6%, a 19% reduction. During the same period, the number of persons aged 65 or over increased from 16 million to 25 million. That's an increase of 54%. That's how rapidly the older age people are coming into our total population mix, and that's us. Stated another way, in 1960, for every 100 children under the age of five, there were only 81 persons aged 65 and over. But by 1980, for every 100 children, there were 156 senior Americans. And that is increasing even more so now that we're up here in 1988. There are still more than that. We're even higher than 156.
One of the reasons why people don't like to look at age is because there's a lot of misconceptions about age. And we thought it would be interesting to look at some of the research that's being done on various aspects of aging. And we're going to do this in a way that we're going to be making some statements which we hope that you will mentally be answering true or false. And then we'll give you what the research says to it then. 6 million and increasing at the rate of about 1,400 per day.
Okay, the last census, there were about 36 million Americans over age 60. The number over age 65 was close to 26 million and increasing at the rate of about 1,400 per day. That's true. Each day, about 4,700 people reach 65 and about 3,300 people over 65 die. This leaving a net increase each day of 1,400 reaching the age of 65.
One of the fastest growing segments of the population is the age group 100 plus.
One of the fastest growing segments of the population is the age group 100 plus. True. In the recent census, there were about 14,000 people over age 100. In just 4 years, their number has risen 43%. Today, there are 30,000 in the U.S. who are 100 or older.
Most symptoms of disease in older adults are not caused by aging at all. They stem from physical inactivity, poor nutrition, and overeating.
Most symptoms of disease in older people are not caused by aging at all. They stem from physical inactivity, poor nutrition, and overeating. True. Some would add psychological stress and environmental pollution as contributors to disease at any age, but physical inactivity, poor nutrition, and overeating are the greater cause.
Sexual interest and capacity in old age are affected by exercise and diet.
Sexual interest and capacity in old age are affected by exercise and diet. True. Sexual well-being at any age is closely tied in with a healthy body, and in older age, it certainly is no exception.
Normal physical aging of heart, lungs, and muscles can be slowed and even reversed by regular exercise.
Normal physical aging of heart, lungs, and muscles can be slowed and even reversed by regular exercise. True, but it needs to be some kind of endurance activity such as cycling, swimming, or brisk walking.
More people die of old age now than in the days before sanitation and antibiotics, when more died of contagious diseases.
More people die of old age now than in the days before sanitation and antibiotics, when more died of contagious diseases? False. A trick question. Nobody dies of old age. There is always at least one specific physical cause of death.
About 3/4 of older Americans have living grandchildren.
About 3/4 of older Americans have living grandchildren. True. This, is a natural phenomenon that's taking place because we are all living longer.
About 10% of the people over 65 have children who are also over 65.
About 10% of the people over 65 have children who are also over 65. True, again, because of our living longer.
About half of the people 65 and over who have living children are members of a four-generation family.
About half of the people 65 and over who have living children are members of a four-generation family. True, again, because we are living longer.
About 80% of Americans 65 and older have at least one living brother or sister.
About 80% of Americans 65 and over have at least one living brother or sister. True, again, longevity.
American families tend to abandon their older members when the elders' health and income decline.
American families tend to abandon their older members when the elders' health and income decline. False. When older people need home care, 80% of it is provided by their families.
Most older men are married, but most older women are widows.
Most older men are married, most older women are widows. True. In the United States, 77% of older men are married and 52% of older women are widows. There are about 5.3 times as many older widows as there are older widowers.
About 2/3 of all women over 65 live alone.
About 2/3 of all women over 65 live alone. False. It's about 1/3.
About 20% of older Americans never attend religious services.
About 20% of older Americans never attend religious services. False. A HUD survey on the quality of life showed that 47% of people over 65 never attend religious services. A great source of reaching out for us.
In some ways, people are better suited for creative work in old age than they are at a younger age.
In some ways, people are better suited for creative work in old age than they are at a younger age. True. Older people have more experience to draw from, and they commonly have more patience, more ability to take failure in stride, and better mastery of the environment, better decision-making skills, and better critical thinking ability than they ever had before. David Maitland, in his book, Aging, states that certain opportunity for growth and learning is impossible until one reaches the later years. He points out that discoveries that come with age almost cannot be known in the earlier years.
The average person need not worry about a decline in mental ability in the later years.
The average person need not worry about a decline in mental ability in later years. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. True. Many of the studies...
No, that's not true.
Okay, I used that at the wrong point, didn't I?
Yes.
That statement is false, but it is true that your mental ability does not decline. Many of the studies claiming to show a decline in intelligence have identified the effects of illness, not of old age, says Harry R. Moody of the Brookdale Center of Aging of Hunter College. He adds, in some areas, such as tests measuring insight into problem situations, in creative understanding and metaphoric processing, older people show actual statistical gains.
Let's end this talk about research on a lighthearted vein. Women are more likely than men to fib about their age, to claim they're younger than they are.
Women are more likely than men to fib about their age, to claim they're younger than they are. False. Contrary to popular belief, men are more vain about their age than women, says David Hackett Fisher. The 39 syndrome is a masculine weakness, not a feminine one. It is also strongest in what we call middle age, rising through the 30s and 40s and peaking at about 50, but never entirely disappearing. Fisher analyzes the phenomenon of age heaping in U.S. Census data. He says it's common for people, especially men, to list themselves on the census as 39 until suddenly they're 49.
Was any of this research surprising to you? It was to some of the senior groups that we've met with, and it was some of it was surprising to Dell and me. We found a lot of it pretty sobering, especially so when we realized how little most seniors we talk to understand what's happening and how fearful we are about accepting aging and how inadequate, woefully inadequate, is our preparation for it, both as individuals and as a church. As we think back over the statistics and the research that we've just covered, it really helps us better understand that the nation is aging, the church is aging. Fewer babies are being born, and technology is allowing us to live much, much longer. And we see evidence of this wherever we travel, because there are more and more senior Christians in every congregation that we go to.
Let's shift our thinking just a little bit and consider another aspect of aging. We want to talk now a little bit about fear of aging. How many of us grew up dreading the old age because we thought that it meant a downhill trip? A lot of us did, I know. Personally, I think that's the crux of our fear, a belief that age carries with it a picture of weakness, helplessness, and uselessness. And who wants that? Art Linkletter has written a new book that's just come out on the press. It's called Old Age is Not for Sissies. And I think we can really relate to that, because we're convinced, too, that old age is not for sissies. It's there for people who want to work. It can be great from your own personal experience standpoint. But growing old in today's world, as well as in the Lord's church, has been and will be an uphill battle, but it's one that we can certainly meet and conquer and make the most of. We hope that we will help change the opportunity that people will have and will take to make their personal lives all that it can be and all that you would want it to be. We're going to ask senior citizens in the days that we have ahead and the opportunities that we have to set aside these fears, to look at them for what they really are, and to realize that they're not the fears that we believe them to be, but that on the other side of the coin are very many opportunities that we need to seize and take advantage of and to enrich our lives and therefore enrich the lives of others. We're going to take at least three of these fears right now and tell you what our perspective of those are. And the first is that we've heard is, I dread the limits getting older will place on me.
Well, I think that we certainly have to say there are going to be changes in your life as you get older. Advancing years do bring some limitations. But I think we believe, by and large, that limitations are a product of the mind, really, and most often not of external factors, unless we choose to make them so. Now, we are not trying to diminish the fact that our bodies will not do the things that we want them to do, that we no longer have the stamina that we once had. We're not talking about that. But so many of the seniors that we talk to, when they talk about limitations, when we get right down to it, it's limitations that they themselves have placed on themselves. And so we would say that limitations are more a matter of the mind. All right, I can't do one thing, but I can do something else. If I only center on what I'm no longer able to do, then I will not turn and see the things that I can do. The second fear that they most often expressed was, I dread being dependent upon others.
I think far too many seniors have allowed their independence to be taken away from them, have just really surrendered it by taking on a very passive attitude and letting other people make decisions for them. I can appreciate that there are times when an older person may not be capable of making their own decisions. And there are times when you shouldn't really just take a stubborn obstinance for when people are really trying to help you for reasons that are legitimate. But at the same token, I think far too many senior citizens have really stepped back and just handed their lives over to somebody else and said, you make all of my decisions, whether they be financial or physical or whatever they may be. I believe that older people have the opportunity and should continue to keep to themselves every modicum of independence that they possibly can, that they're capable of keeping. and not to get into the mode of turning that over to somebody else. We had a rather dramatic example of that in our own family, in which my mother, when my father passed away, became as independent a person as she had been when she was when my father was still living. She continued to do things outside of the home, outside of herself, attending Senior Citizen Center, but she often didn't like to do that because there were just old people down there. And she gradually became accustomed to that and admitting that that these were people of her own age. But she was a person who was her own person, who maintained her own independence and continued in life until she finally did pass away. I remember we laughed at her one time when she says, I want to
live until I die.
Yeah. Margie's mother, on the other hand, when her father passed away, became totally dependent upon our household.
She was only 53 years old, too.
She moved in with us, and from that point on, she just surrendered her life to us. As much as we tried to push that independence back upon her, she absolutely would not accept it back. And as a result of that, Marge's and her relationship just reversed. Marge became the mother, and Nanny became the daughter in our household. And so there is an example of a person really surrendering independence that they could have retained, but chose to do it otherwise. The third fear most often mentioned was, I fear being lonely and abandoned.
Well, it is true that as we get older, our families become busier and busier with their own lives and don't have as much time and attention to spend on us then. And I don't mean to be simplistic when I say this, but I really believe and I am convinced that loneliness, like limitation and independence, is a state of mind. Because I want to say this about independence. I think you can be independent living in someone else's home. You may physically have to be under the care of someone else, but that does not mean that you are dependent upon them for your emotional security and for your personhood value. And that's what I think that when I say independence is a matter of the mind. And I know that loneliness is a matter of the mind. The most lonely moments in my life have come when I've been in the midst of hundreds of people. So just being by yourself does not have to be loneliness at all then. It's been our experience that when we see lonely people, again, it's been a decision that they make to center on self rather than to look outward and to find ways of doing that. And you know, you can look outward, whether you live in someone else's home, whether you live in a place of your own, or if you are in a hospital bed completely immobile. I just really believe that so what we need to say to ourselves to do a lot of self-talk is about our attitudes. And all of these things that these seniors are telling us that they fear, they have more control over them than they believe. And we need to have understand that I don't have to be lonely. I don't have to be dependent. And I do not have to be abandoned by others then.
We like to sum up what we've been trying to say this hour by saying this. First, aging is not something which happens at 55 or 60, but it is a God-designed process which begins at the very instant of birth. Aging affects every single one of us, everyone, and it's on a continuing basis every day of our lives. Two, it's a fact that the nation and the church are now and will be in the future having as their fastest growing segment people who are 65 and older. And three, our attitude about aging will determine the effective utilization that we make of individuals and their talents towards enhancing the fruitfulness of life in the church.
In our next hour, we're going to be talking about attitudes toward aging. and we hope that you'll want to be with us in that. And speaking of our attitude about aging, we want to close this session with a little poem by Carl Wilson Baker. Let me grow lovely, growing old. So many fine things do. Laces and ivory and gold. And silks need not be new. There is healing in a grove of old trees. Old streets a glamour hold. Why not I, as well as these, grow lovely growing old?
See you at 11 o'clock.